What is up, everybody? Happy Thursday. It is the voice of a generation, Pete Rosato, once again joined by Backspades Brawl's own The Big Grizz, and we are the Dog Days of Baseball podcast, episode 3. Unfortunately, due to an emergency, our trio member, the Territorian Alphonse Stevens, hopefully we'll be able to get on before we're off tonight, but was scheduled to join us. I am sitting here rocking a classic Homestead Grays Negro League jersey. I wish that the Yankees play over the last couple of days matched our opening video. Grizz, Yanks lost 3 out of 4 to the Baltimore Orioles this week, dropped the final game of the series today. And it's been a low-scoring affair for the most part. Today was kind of the only game where, it was a little bit of an offensive explosion. But the Yankees scored 4 runs in 4 games. The Orioles scoring 15 runs in this 4-game series, beating the Yanks 2-zip, 4-2. Yankees won a 2-0 game, and then Orioles beat the Yankees 7-2. You and I, when we spoke on episode 2, we talked about how the Orioles-Yankees series, especially this upcoming week, was going to be a big test. The Yankees now no longer in first place. The Baltimore Orioles in first place by a game. I mean, is this a sign of what we're going to see the whole season? Just the Orioles kind of, I kind of feel like the Orioles remind me a lot of what the Rays were for a long time. Like, we would always be good against everybody, then go play Tampa Bay, and it was a whole problem.
Yeah, this is how I feel about what I saw from Baltimore so far. Baltimore has Gunnar Henderson, and already he killed us in the first game, which was the only run of the first game of the series, where they opened up what it was 2-0 in the first set. So
yeah,
then we came back one. We didn't win the second game. The second game was a little more competitive.
Lost that 4-2, yeah.
Lost that 4-2. Soto won a 2-run bomb. And then we came back. Oswaldo Cabrera pretty much flipped the score in 2-0 in our favor. What I saw throughout this whole 4-game series is what we've basically been saying. Pitching. That's what it comes down to. It's coming down to pitching, and for the bats not heating up. So pitching is definitely going to be our problem in the long run. And not only is pitching going to be our problem in the long run, also it's going to be relief pitching as well. I'm going to keep preaching it as well, because relief pitching did not come in and help us at all. Neither did the bats help us at all during those games as well. So definitely starting pitching was not the best at all.
I mean, Rodon was really the only one. He had a stinker today, yeah, where he allowed 6 runs in this game. You know, for the most part, the starting pitching was solid. A 2-0 game in that first game. I mean, Clark Schmidt pitched absolutely incredible in game 1, but we lost 2-0. The 4-2 game, we had the base running throw out of Aaron Judge. And then another, and then you have, Cabrera saving the game on a 2-0 game. But as you said, it's the bats. And I think that, to me, is the bigger problem. I mean, the pitching's been somewhat solid outside of today against the Orioles. But I think the fact that the offense is really kind of silent, right, unless Juan Soto is setting the table. And to me, this is the larger problem the Yankees have had for the last couple of years, where they're kind of offensively one-dimensional. And, granted, this year that it's not as home run heavy because we don't really have a lot of the home run hitters, but, like, Rizzo is still what Rizzo is. He's a home run guy, he's a big hit guy, and he's not doing either of those things. Giancarlo Stanton, the same thing. At this point, I'm going to go back to calling him Mike Stanton. If you know, right?
Yeah.
But Giancarlo Stanton, again, is a big hit guy, is a home run guy, is doing neither of those things. And it's not like it's not like Giancarlo Stanton is all of a sudden hitting for average and not hitting home runs. I'd be happy with that if he was getting on base you know, station to station baseball. If, you know, if guys like Rizzo was getting singles and doubles down the gap, even though they're not hitting home runs and hitting for power, if you had a shit slugging percentage, but you're hitting, you know, 260, 270, 280, close to 300, we could live with that, but we're not getting that. And Aaron Judge, I almost feel like something's up. Like, maybe Aaron Judge is hurt. Maybe pitchers have figured him out, but something is definitively up with Aaron Judge because he is not performing like he is used to performing, and it is way off with Aaron Judge right now.
Yeah, Aaron Judge right now at the last game had two at bats with one strikeout, no hits, no RBIs, nothing. It's really not looking good for him right now. I thought the bats were starting to wake up for Aaron Judge, especially in the last series with Milwaukee, with the Brewers, which they showed out in that series. They lost only one game between that, and then they won the next two, which were blowouts. So I don't know what particularly happened when they got to Camden Yards. I don't know what happened as far as the bats. I don't know if it was starting pitching, but we can look to a lot of different things. But even with Baltimore, really, their big hitters really didn't come through for them. Like a Gunnar Henderson didn't really come through, or Westberg or McKenna. Like most of them didn't really. Most of them came through for us. Came through for Baltimore, but Aaron Judge itself. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if it's just, you know, the midseason jitters. Maybe I don't know. I couldn't really tell you. I think, man, I agree with you. There's something. There's a bigger story that we don't know about as to why not hitting where he's supposed to be hitting.
As you said, in stark comparison with the Milwaukee series, 37 runs over three games. 15-5, 15-3, and then the one loss 7-6 to the Brewers, what could have been a possible sweep of Milwaukee, you know, versus now we go to Baltimore, which is much more of a hitter's ballpark. And we can barely, you know, we can barely crack double digit, you know, runs. We're getting 10 runs in the entire series, which is just, I mean, not even 10 runs, sorry, six runs in the entire series. So you go from 37 to six. It's a big swing. And again, the pitching hasn't been bad outside of Rodon tonight, who threw his first inning. Now, don't get me wrong. I had a friend of mine who I texted today, and I was just like, you know, kind of pissed, you know, they put up it was their story from the day before where the Yankees had won 2-0. And I was kind of like, all right, finally, you know, we won a game in this series. And they were like, you know, relax, it's early. And I get it. The Yankees are still in second place. They're 20-13, 7 games over .500. They're only one game out of first place. But this is also an AL East where Boston has, what, the second most players on the injured reserve, and yet for some reason is 18-14 with no big real stars on that team. And as well, you also have a Toronto Blue Jays team that's still hanging around at 15-17. And we all know, like, if that lineup starts to hit to the back of its baseball card, Toronto is still a force to be reckoned with. So the Yankees cannot afford to slip too much.
Yeah. Yeah, the service is spotty on this side. But, for the most part, I heard you. They can't afford to lose those type of games, especially with division in their division. They can do that. It's early. Yeah, it is early. But what's being shown now throughout, 20-some-odd games played, almost 30 games played, they're not a good pitching team for the most part. They're not a good pitching team. And hitting, we have said that their plate discipline is something that I've praised on here. But now they're starting to hit a funk with their plate discipline. They're taking more swings at the plate, more than they should. and they're getting behind in counts and getting more strikeouts recently, at least throughout the Baltimore series. They had more strikeouts.
Yeah. And when we're looking at just Major League Baseball right now, if we're looking at average, the Yankees are 12th in the major leagues in average, hitting .246 as a team. They have a .333 on base percentage, which oddly enough is still good enough for fourth in the major leagues. But when you look at that slugging percentage of .398, again, we drop down into 11. We're slugging less than the Houston Astros, who don't even have a team. We're slugging less than the Boston Red Sox, who have nobody on the offensive side of the ball that I can even name. Right. And again, what's the number one slugging team in Major League Baseball right now? It just so happens to be the Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I think that's been the main ingredient, if you will, with Baltimore. The main ingredient with them, yeah, their pitching is not as solid, but their hitting is making up for it. So,
yeah. And when we go to pitching, by the way, you know, the Yankees, you know, right now against Major League Baseball, when we're looking at ERA, I mean, you talk about the pitching hasn't been great. They have the third best team ERA in the major leagues at 2.97, behind only the Boston Red Sox and the Seattle Mariners. And they were number one in saves. Now, what does bother me is the 10 quality starts. I mean, it's near the bottom of the pack. You're talking 18th out of 27 in the major league, only 10 quality starts in 32 games played. But when we're talking about, okay, at least the ERA is pretty good, which for a team that lost Gerrit Cole in the beginning of the year, you did not think the team ERA would be third best in the major leagues right now.
That's very true. Losing Gerrit Cole, we expected to be bottom of the pile, you know, especially not getting the big time signings and nobody really going out for rotation players as far as our bullpen goes. So now we're in a predicament where, you know, we're honestly one of the best bullpens in the American League, and that's a shocker to us at least. So yeah. I mean, as much as we sit here and can criticize, okay, this particular series, the starting pitching was not as good. And, you know, even Carlos Rodon today pitching four innings pitched. You can look to that today and you can still look at that as a success overall for everybody. Clark Schmidt did not, I think this was his worst game in this series. I think this has been his worst game so far. He's 5-2 on the year so far, or 5-1 on the year. So, I mean, there's not too much to critique as far as starting pitching goes, but it is going to be a problem down the road when you play those big games. And this was one of those big game series that your pitching needed to come through. And unfortunately, it was just the bats for us that didn't come through along with the pitching.
Yeah. And we'll continue our New York report a little bit later. We'll get to the Mets and give them their own time as well. But let's talk about a big story that was actually put forth by, you know, our resident territorian, Alphon Stevens. We've had one bigger than the other, Japanese pitching signings this year in Yamamoto to the Dodgers and Shota Imanaga to the Chicago Cubs. And most people thought Yamamoto would be the guy to watch. And listen, from a purely number standpoint, if you're just looking at the back of the baseball card, 3-1 with a 2.91 ERA. In five starts, you may not think is too bad, but then you look at Shota Imanaga, who's 5-0 in five starts with an ERA of 0.78. And then you look at the type of money that Yamamoto got signed for. Is this a flash in the pan for Imanaga and even for Yamamoto, or is is Imanaga going to be the better long-term signing than Yamamoto at this point?
I think for Yamamoto, it's more about finding himself and finding himself in American baseball. Because we know and seen what he's done in the World Baseball Classic and in Japanese baseball. But is he worth the amount of money that the Dodgers paid him is really the long-term question. Are they going to regret signing him for that amount of time and for that amount of money in the long run? Idenamo, on the other hand, looks like an all-star this year. He looks like he's, you know, first ballot all-star to go into the all-star game for the NL to be a pitcher. I think time will only tell. Time will only tell who's going to come out as the more elite pitcher between the two. Because right now, that's the argument. Who is the more elite pitcher? And to be honest with you, they're just both on the wrong. Well, I don't think Yamamoto's on the wrong team. Iganama for sure is on the wrong team with the Cubs. The Cubs are now sitting at what they just lost with the Mets today. They're sitting.
The Cubs have the number one most injured team in the major leagues right now.
Number one most injured team. They're sitting at 19-13, which is still isn't too bad.
I mean, they're second in the Central. They're only a game out of first.
Right. So you're talking about a team that's sitting second in their division. I mean, you really don't have much to complain about, at least with Iguodala. You have nothing to complain about. Like you said, the ERA is – he's literally giving up nothing, hardly anything. You can get past the plate with this guy. Yamamoto, on the other hand, we saw what happened, and guys are figuring out this guy like that. So I think it's more so Yamamoto has to find that MLB professional type of game. And I think once he finds that, we'll see the real difference. It's only year one.
This is true.
By the end of the season, we'll be able to really see where these two guys are at when it's all said and done.
Well, when we're looking at it, and I misspoke here, Imanaga does have six starts on the year. He's got a decision, a win in five of those six starts, 5-0. The only game that he did not get a decision in was actually an early season 8-1 victory over the Dodgers, where he pitched shutout baseball for four innings, gave up two hits, and only had three strikeouts, actually his lowest strikeout game of his six starts. He struck out 9, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 7, and he has not given up a walk in three of his six starts. He's given up one walk in two and only two walks in one start. In fact, his worst start so far was his start against Miami, a 5-3 victory where he gave up five hits, three runs, only two earned, five Ks. So, you know, for the most part, I mean, he just pitched a shutout against the Mets, seven innings, no runs, three hits, seven strikeouts to only one walk. And, you know, Imanaga really doing well. Yamamoto, on the other hand, listen, let's give credit where the man is due. I mean, the man got rocked in his first start ever in the major leagues. Five runs and four hits, only got an inning of work in, ERA ballooned to 45. His second start was a loss for the team, but much better for Yamamoto. No runs on two hits in five innings with five strikeouts. He then proceeded to give up no runs on three hits in five innings with eight strikeouts and a 4-1 victory, his first victory in the major leagues against the Chicago Cubs. A no decision against San Diego, a no decision against the Mets. Then did get a win against the Washington Nationals, a 2-1 victory, and a 8-0 victory against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, the big thing for Yamamoto has been the home run. When he's, you know, San Diego game, which LA lost in extra innings, three runs, four hits, five innings, giving up two home runs. And then if you look at the Met game, where he gave up four runs, three of them earned on seven hits, and also gave up a home run. When he does not give up a home run outside of his initial game in the major leagues, he's been very, very good. He'll give up some hits. He'll give up, you know, he'll only go five or six innings. I think the issue is you came to a team that was supposed to have all this offensive firepower, and you also came to a team that was supposed to have a lot of pitching protection, right? We all knew that, of course, Shohei wasn't going to be there this year. But when you think about it, Walker Buehler is coming back, his first start back from Tommy John surgery. You have a rotation that has Tyler Glasnow, Yamamoto, Walker Buehler, and Shohei Ohtani when he comes off the injured list. You can hide Yamamoto as your number three or number four guy, and he'll probably be one of the most dominant number three, number four pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. People forget, for example, the Yankees did that for a lot of years with Andy Pettit. Andy Pettit was always the number three starter in the regular season rotation. He was the best number three starter you were ever going to have. And it's usually because we had a frontline starter in a David Cohn or a Roger Clemens or a Mike Mussina. And you were able to hide in Andy Pettit somewhere in the 3-4 spot of that rotation. Now, all of a sudden, when we got to the postseason, Andy Pettit was always Mr. Number Game Number Two, right? He was always going to start Game Two because he was just going to be the most dominant guy. You know, yes, if Yamamoto is your top-line starter right now, I don't know if he's a top-line starter in the major leagues. No. I do believe he's the best number three, number four guy they're going to have. And with the rotation that they're supposed to have, you know, yeah, he's a steal as a number three starter, as a number four starter, even for the type of money that you're getting him for. Imanaga, though, looks like, as you said, an all-star right now. He's been untouchable. And it's going to be a big question because we all know how the two big things that are the big questions with Japanese baseball is, A, how will their body hold up to the workload of pitching every 5 days in American baseball? And how does the workload of what they did for so many years in Japan going to affect their body in America?
Yeah, for sure. Looking at Yamamoto for May 1st, he pitched 6 innings against the Diamondbacks, had 5 hits with an ERA of 2.91. I mean, again, like you said, as a number three pitcher in a rotation, can't ask for anything more than that. You really can't. And then you have, you know, Walker Buehler coming back. You've got Tyler Glasnow in that rotation. And of course, when Shohei comes off of that injured reserve list, you have now 4 somewhat solid pitchers, more than capable solid pitchers to where you can hide Yamamoto as that third or fourth, like you said, that third or fourth to pitch. And not so much is so in demand of him, because I feel like that's the problem right now. He's taking on more than what's being asked of him because of the injuries and Shohei Ohtani not being there, as at least as a pitcher. There's more being asked of him as an ace when he is clearly not their ace. Clearly, yeah, not the Dodgers' ace.
Going from the Dodgers to the same city, but the other league. This past Tuesday, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim announced that Mike Trout once again has suffered an injury. Mike Trout has a torn meniscus in his left knee and will have to undergo surgery. Now, this will not be a season-ending surgery, but it will be 2 to 3 months of a recovery, so we're probably not going to see Mike Trout back on a baseball field until August. You know, and by that time, you got to wonder if they're even going to push him to come back, because are the Angels even going to be competitive at that time? You know, when Trout went down, he was hitting 220, Major League Baseball leading, 10 home runs in 29 games. But here's the issue, right? This is the fourth injury, and a big injury, in as many years. From 2001 to 2023, he's only played in 49% of his games. He's played 237 out of a 486 possible games. In 2017, he missed 47 days with a torn thumb ligament. In 2021, he missed 139 games with a calf strain. And he only played 36 games that year and no games after May 17. In 2022, he missed 35 days with back inflammation. And then in 2023, he missed 89 games because of a broken hamate bone in his left hand. You know, he came back pretty quickly, went out on July 3rd and came back on August 22nd, played one game and then shut it down for the rest of the season, right? So he was out after July 3rd, essentially last year. And now we have a torn meniscus, and the kid's a center fielder.
Yeah.
You know, you're a power hitter who has had a calf strain, now a torn meniscus. You've had back inflammation, which we've seen a lot of guys go down with backs, including David Wright himself having a very bad back. We've heard a lot of guys having bulky backs. And then you've had a torn thumb ligament and a broken hamate bone. So you've had injuries affect your hands, which you need to grip the bat. You've had injuries affect your legs and now your meniscus and your calf strain. And you're already showing issues of a bulky back. You're supposed to be the face of Major League Baseball for, to some degree.
Right.
And you can't stay healthy. And, you know, we ended the show last week asking the question, like, is Mike Trout going to want out of L.A. first? Or the Angels finally just going to give in and trade him? And at this point, you have to wonder, A, is L.A. going to try? Because, you know, at this point, if I'm Scott Boras, if I'm, you know, Mike Trout, I'm staying in L.A. and taking all the money.
Right.
Just keep paying me.
Right.
But is any team going to feel safe even trying to go after a guy like Mike Trout, considering his injury history the last 4 years? What's going on with Trout?
And there's a lot that you said there, and a lot has to do with the injuries as well. And like you said, a torn meniscus and everything as far as a power hitter goes, that's where your power comes from, your legs. And when you swing that bat and you're a home run hitter, if you are not getting that power from that legs, you are not power hitting that baseball. I don't know. It might be time for Trout to hang it up. I mean, it might not be the most popular decision. It may not be the most popular statement coming out of my mouth. But at this point, you have so many injuries. Like you said, who's going to gamble on you right now? You're 32 going on 33 going with a 14-year contract, and the Angels are still paying you, and who's going to want you at the end of the day? Nobody. There's teams that probably can take on that contract and take on that amount of money, but you're going to be in the same situation you are in Los Angeles. You're going to be raking in that money, and you're going to be playing for a subpar team that cannot sign anyone, that cannot give you help, that probably doesn't have the hitters, or if they don't have the pitchers, and you're going to be the face of that team. It's the same situation. So at this point, you either have one of two options. You have either I stay on Los Angeles and keep Los Angeles paying me the money, which I agree, that's probably the best bet, or it might be time for you to hang up the cleats. I mean, are you going to go down as a Hall of Famer? In baseball terms, you might. You just might go down as a Hall of Famer. I mean, you have the credentials. The only thing that eludes you is a World Series championship. So, I mean, there's that option as well. I know at one point
and we could
time,
say, listen, for 7 years, Mike right. Trout was probably the most feared hitter, if not one of the most feared hitters in baseball. From 2012 to 2019, you could not deny what Mike Trout was capable of at the plate. From 2012, his second year in L.A., hitting .326 with 30 home runs and 83 RBIs in 139 games. And then in 2013, he hit left home runs, 27, but he hit .323, which was incredible. 2014, .287, jumped to 36 home runs and 111 RBIs. You know, you're talking 41, 29, 33, 39, 45. That 2019 year. 291, 45 home runs, 104 RBIs on top of 110 walks. And then we started to see the decline. 2020, 2021, 2022 was a bounce back year. Okay. Average was lower, 283, but he came back to hit 40 home runs, only had 80 RBIs though. And then 2023, 2024, it's been a lot. And by the way, I missed a couple here, going all the way back to May of 2017. Left hamstring tightness, May 17, torn ligament and thumb. June of 2018, sprained index finger. August of 2018, right wrist inflammation. April of 2019, a right groin strain. Then right calf tightness, July of 19. Right foot surgery, September of 19. The calf strain in 21. And now, and then we had the hamate bone in 22. In 23. And now we have, again, out again.
Yeah, and just to rattle off the highlights of Mike Trout here, and the people in the comments or whoever's going to watch this can argue whether or not, you know, Mike Trout will be, you know, in the Hall of Fame one day. You got an 11-time All-Star, 3-time AL MVP, 3-time All MLB First Team, Rookie of the Year, 9-time Silver Slugger, 2-time AL Hank Aaron Award, the AL RBI run leader, RBI leader, and the AL stolen base leader. I mean, that's, you have nothing to be ashamed of if your career ended tomorrow. You have nothing to be ashamed of. The only thing that eludes you right now is just you've never been to the playoffs and you've never competed for a World Series. So those are the two things that might have people kind of like, I don't know if I'm ready to give him Hall of Fame, but you have a lot of other people who are in the Hall of Fame who have not won a championship. This is the same thing, just like basketball. There's a lot of guys who are worthy of that Hall of Fame career that have never won an NBA championship. There's a lot of people that are in the MLB who have never won, and they are in that Hall of Fame. So, but as far as Mike Trout goes, let's see if they do shut him down for the rest of the season. I don't think they do. Right now, they're sitting at 11-20. It's not good at all. But their division is, I wouldn't say it's weak, but it's winnable. Their division is definitely winnable. So we'll see how the rest of the season goes, how long they're going to shut him down for, because they really haven't said anything. They've really kept this pretty much quiet for the most part. You've got the Mariners sitting at 17-14, the Rangers sitting at 17-15, Athletics 15-17, and then you got the Angels at 11-20 and the Astros at 10-20. So
yeah,
a run can be made. A run can be made. And depending on what happens, we don't know what's going to happen over the next few weeks. We don't know how long Trout's going to be out, but they could be competing for a wild card at the end of the season. We don't know just yet, but it's definitely a winnable division.
Yeah. Just quickly to answer Matt's question from the chat, I'm wearing this jersey because I'm going to be trying to rotate through my baseball jerseys on each show. And I decided it was time to give a shout out to the Homestead Grays of the Negro Leagues. I do own two authentic Negro League jerseys, the Homestead Grays and the New York Cubans, by the way. Great Negro League teams. I'm trying to actually get some more Negro League jerseys and things like that. But I'm going to, Grizz, before we leave off of Mike Trout, because you said something, you said about him being a Hall of Famer possibly without winning a championship. I'm going to name off just four names for you.
Okay.
And now there are, don't get me wrong, there are 27 Hall of Fame players as of 2022. That have never played in a World Series, let alone have won a World Series, okay? So these players that I'm about to mention have never even been to the World Series, okay? But these four are the four most recent from our generation of players that are in the Hall of Fame that never went to a World Series. Frank Thomas.
Okay.
He was a member of the 2005 championship White Sox, but was not on the postseason roster and did not play the majority of the season due to injury. So they don't count him as having been a World Series champion.
That's fair.
Frank Thomas, Griffey Jr.,
mm-hmm.
Edgar Martinez,
yeah,
and Roy Halladay.
And those are all
generation.
Those are all capable people and have the stats to be in the Hall of Fame.
Does Mike Trout measure up to that? And listen, Edgar Martinez waited how many years to get in, right? Was not a first ballot guy. And it took, you know, the big argument was the man played DH for most of his career, but he basically, you know, reinvented the designated hitter position. Like when you think designated hitter, especially for us growing up, it's Edgar Martinez. Right. When you think of Roy Halladay, his numbers were absolutely incredible. And this is a man who should still be, you know, contributing to the major leagues had it not been for his unfortunate and untimely death at a young age. Frank Thomas, I mean, had to wait forever, but the big hurt had numbers that you could not deny to get into the Hall of Fame. And Griffey was Griffey. I mean, everyone said that Griffey, you know, it's kind of the same argument they have for Bonds. The people who, you know, the people who talk about, like, did Bonds take steroids or not? They're like, well, Bonds had a Hall of Fame career before steroids. Yeah. I hate to say this, but I almost see Griffey and Trout in the same light, right? They're two guys who are prodigious players, both of them center field. Oddly enough, both playing for West Coast teams. Prodigious players who just seem to get hampered in what should have been the prime of their career by the injury bug. Because everyone will tell you, if Griffey had not been so injury prone upon going to Cincinnati, there would have been no doubt Griffey, like, would have been first ballot, if not. Probably a lot of people argue Griffey probably could have been the major league home run all-time leader had it not been for the way that injuries affected his career going to Cincinnati.
Yeah. You know what? That comparison is really not that far-fetched, to be honest with you. They played the same position, pretty much in the same division. Not pretty much, in the same division. The numbers don't mirror each other, obviously. But you can, if Trout plays, let's just say another, let's say 4 or 5 years, I think that he can pretty much eclipse most of those numbers. If not,
let me see here. I'm trying to pull up Griffey stats real quick.
Because those, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr., we already know what kind of hitter he was. We already know the dominant home run hitter he was. Trout is just as dominant. I wouldn't say he's more dominant, but he's just as dominant when he's healthy. So that's the thing that's going to keep that either can make or break his numbers in the long run. Can Trout stay healthy for the next 2 years, 3 years? Because he can hit those numbers, but will he be healthy in the long run?
Trout for the most part, average wise, has had more years over 300 than Griffey did. Griffey's best hitting year was 91, where he hit 327. But when we look at, like, his prodigious years, I mean, 93, 45 home runs, 109 RBIs, he hit 309. 40 home runs, 90 RBIs in 94, he hit 323. We look at the big 50 home run years, 96, 49 home runs, 140 RBIs, hit 303. 97, 56 home runs, 147 RBIs, hit 304. And then he dropped down to 284 in 1998, where he had 56 home runs and 146 RBIs. I mean, there's no denying that, I mean, Griffey's offensive number, 630 home runs for Griffey, a lifetime average of 284. If I'm looking at Mike Trout right now, he does have 378 home runs. Lifetime average of 299, so a little bit better of a hitter than Griffey by about 15 points. And, you know, listen, may end up with more home runs. But again, this injuries, right? This is a guy right now sitting at 378. Is he going to be able to hit 30, 40 home runs again? I mean, that's the question. I mean, if you look at Griffey's first year in Cincinnati, he had 40 home runs. And then that's when the injury bug started to hit him. And the two seasons where he played the most games after his initial season in Cincinnati was 2005 and 2007. 2005, he played 128 games, hit 35 home runs, hit 301. 2007, he played in 144 games, hit 30 home runs, and hit 277. But when you look at the big time of his career, I mean, in 1997, he played 157 out of 162 games. In 98, he missed one game. In 99, he missed two. Mike Trout, played 159 games, 157, 157, 159, 159. It's only been four. The most games that he's played since 2016 was 140 in 2018.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what's going to come down to it for a lot of people. It's availability, right? That's the whole thing of baseball. Whether, no matter what position you play, whether you play pitcher, you're DH, you're one of the, you're the captain of the squad, whatever it is, availability is everything. So from the numbers alone, Ken Griffey was more available than Mike Trout at this point in their careers. So again, that all goes back to, is Mike Trout in the next 2, 3, 4 years going to be as available? Is, because he is a person that is capable of hitting those numbers, but is he going to be available to hit those numbers? And at that point, I think the real question is, for Trout, do you care more about your legacy as far as your hitting and your numbers go, or do you care about putting yourself in a position to win a championship or at least compete in the playoffs? Because that's where this new generation comes down to. You can have the numbers, but you've never been to the playoffs. Or you can have, you know, the home runs, but you've never competed for a championship. So those are the two solid questions that are on everyone's mind right now that can go forward for the next couple of years as we see guys like Tatis Jr. and, you know, Machado is another power hitter. Aaron Judge is in that same conversation right now with the Yankees. So Trout's not the only one with this issue, but at least guys like that have been to the playoffs or have, you know, been close to a World Series. So only time will tell with Trout. But his availability and his health is what's the main thing that's going to either make or break his career, at least for me.
This is very true. And I think it's going to make him make or break his Hall of Fame resume if he's even going to be Hall of Fame eligible. Talking about a team who might take a flyer on a Mike Trout when if he's ever available for trade or a free agent ever again. Let's come back to New York and talk about the New York Metropolitans, who did defeat the Chicago Cubs today, 7-6. Francisco Lindor coming off the bench to deliver a pair of two-run doubles that led to their rally. They split with the Chicago Cubs, two wins out of four games, winning 4-2 and 7-6 and losing 1-0 and 3-1. And there was a lot of debate over that 1-0 game as well, with whether or not there was catcher interference at the plate. But listen, I honestly think the Mets, and I know a lot of Mets fans, and if Alphonse was here right now, he'd be like, what are you talking about? There's no way. I think the Mets have had a recent better run right now. Granted, they're 16-15, third place in their division, than the Yankees. Why? The Mets went to LA, played the Dodgers, and won that series. Won two out of three games in that series, beating the Dodgers 9-4 and 6-4, losing only in the final game 10-0. Now, granted, they went and then lost a series to the Giants, and then they lost a series to the Cardinals, but they've been relatively competitive. Luis Severino has looked like he's revitalizing his career on the other side of the city.
Man, looking like, you know, and early NL Cy Young right now.
Yeah, and I'm going to go even further back, right? They went to Atlanta, and granted, one game was postponed because of rain, but they went to Atlanta. Many people would say either the best team or the 1A team in the National League. And what did they do? They took the series 2-1. They beat the Braves in game 1, 8-7. They lost by only one run in game 2, 6-5. And then they hammered the Braves 16-4. So you took a series 2-1 against the Dodgers and 2-1 against the Braves, both of them in their ballparks.
Yeah.
Like, you beat two of the best teams in your league, if not two of the best teams in the major leagues this year, right now. You won both of those series away from home. Listen, I know the Mets don't look great right now on paper, but when I'm looking at these games, and again, a lot of us, and you and I, both old school baseball fans, there's something about that eye test, right? Yeah. I'm seeing something better out of them right now than I'm seeing out of the Yankees.
Yeah, and I can tell you exactly where, at least where I see it. I see it here, the away. They're 7-5 away from home. 7-5 on the road, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing pretty much 500 baseball away from, you know, away from home. Now, at home, they're 9-10. The Yankees away right now are 12-8, but they're 8-5 at home. So the numbers really favor more of the Yankees right now. They favor more of the Yankees. The Yankees are like I said, 8-5 at home, but pretty much they're flipped. They're flipped for both squads. But what I do love from the Mets, though, the Mets are a better road team. Right now they're 4-6. They're out of the last 10, they're 4-6.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not – the numbers aren't, you know, something to get excited about. But the team itself is something to get excited about. Like you said, Luis Severino, I mean, come on. The guy is pitching probably some of the best baseball he's pitched in a very long time. I mean, right now his
numbers – 35 innings, has only given up 9 yeah. earned runs and yeah. 2 home runs in 35 innings to a 2.31 ERA. Pitched damn near – I believe he pitched almost a no-hitter. Or if it's a shutout, I should say, in one of his most recent starts.
Right. And the only game you could really look to say where he really had a bad game so far is against the Reds, which he had 5 innings pitched and a 3.6 ERA. Everything else, well, no, not even that, against the Brewers, where he had 5.4. But everything else has pretty much been a clean game for him so far. But outside of maybe 2 or 3 games, he's had a clean game so far with the pitching. So pitching for the Mets, it's relatively been good, and it's kind of flipped, right? Like the Yankees pitching hasn't been as clean as the Mets pitching, but then the hitting for the Mets hasn't been as good as the Yankee hitting.
Right. And again, so, the big thing is, and I know this name is kind of like, you know, persona non grata in Queens, mm-hmm. but like, we know what it is with the Mets, right? Jacob DeGrom was showed this number one during his career. You can be the best pitcher in baseball and pitch for the New York Metropolitans, but if you don't get the run support offensively, you're not going to go far. And you talk about Luis Severino right now. The last 2 games, okay, against the San Francisco Giants, he pitched, they gave up 3 runs on 5 hits, struck out 5, in 6 innings, but the Mets only scored 1 run. You look at back in Cincinnati, his second start of the year, he gave up 2 runs, only 1 earned in 5 innings, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts. The Mets lost 9-6. And then you look at just this past Monday against the Chicago Cubs, which they lost 3-1, but he gave up 1 run on 1 hit in 8 innings. He pitched 8 innings and gave up 1 run. And they score only 1 run, and they lose it in the 9th. So, you know, at some point, and this is the big thing with them, their offense is, listen, Francisco Lindor may have saved the game today, but the guy's only hitting 207 right now. Let's just be very honest with you.
Yeah.
Okay. He's probably the second best Met on the team in terms of name value. He's hitting 207. He is second on the team with 5 home runs. Pete Alonso's still only hitting 218, but he's got 8 home runs, 15 RBIs. But that to me is another big thing. You know, Pete Alonso's only got 15 RBIs, right? Like, you don't have a lot of opportunities to knock guys in when you have Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor coming up. They're not hitting for average. Right now, their best starter hitting for average is Harrison Bader, who's hitting 281. And then Starlin Marte, who's kind of finding that groove again, hitting 274. They need to pick it up. The Lindor, the guys who are getting paid the big bucks, and you and I have spoken about this for a long time, and as members, as longtime Yankee fans, When you're getting paid the big money, when you're getting paid the big contract, you are the one who will shoulder all the blame, because the expectation is you should be the one fueling the team to victory. And in the case of Lindor and Alonso, that's not happening in Queens.
Yeah, for sure. It's not happening for them right now. And then not only that, we got the whole, you know, Pete Alonso drama, the Juan Soto drama going on, which that just actually came through on my phone. Alonso not likely to be traded. However, the Mets are still listening to trade offers. So, you know, hey, listen, anything can happen in baseball right now. Like you said, Pete Alonso not really playing the best baseball that he's been playing. We know that he can play better than this. But with all the drama going on, that could be a problem there. Switching to the Bronx, though, Gerrit Cole is targeting for a June return and scheduled to throw first bullpen pitch on Saturday. So that's a good sign for us Yankee fans that we will be getting Gerrit Cole back in the rotation, which would be great. Yes. For which is showing
last note on the Mets, I will say this. You know the Mets are going to look at it, and everyone's been talking about it. We talked about, I think, in episode one, this idea of like, well, if Alonso walks, maybe the Mets go after Soto, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm Juan Soto, or if I'm any other young power hitter, if I'm any other young generational player, I'm not signing a long-term contract with the Mets unless I know that they're willing to go and get me. This is kind of like a LeBron in Cleveland situation. Are you going to go and get me help? Because I can't do it on my own. And Pete Alonso has shown that. Jacob deGrom has shown that. We saw this with LeBron in Cleveland and in the NBA. You can't do it alone.
Right.
You need help around you. You need people to help offensively set the table for you. You need – listen, in episode one, we were talking about Bernie and Paul O'Neill and guys like Tino Martinez who don't really get the kind of respect that they should when people talk about the Yankees and the core four and things like that.
Right.
But they don't have Paul O'Neill – Bernie Williams, Tino Martinez, hell, even Jason Giambi are as good as they are as Yankees because of the Chuck Knoblauchs, the Derek Jeters, the Alfonso Sorianos, who were setting the table and getting on base to make it easier for those guys to get pitches to hit and drive in runs. And that's what you need to do. It's very hard when you have nobody on base and two outs and Pete Alonso's coming up. You know why Pete Alonso's not getting a lot of pitches to hit? Because they're just going to walk. And if I'm any young pitcher, I mean, or young hitter, it's going to be hard for me to, you know, say, like, I'm going to go sign a long-term contract with the Mets and then realize the entire weight of the offensive production is going to come down to me. And it's just and then I'm going to get skewered by the New York fan base and the New York media. Before we wrap up with our power rankings, let's go to our trivia question of the week. And Grizz, I'll give you an opportunity to pick what you want again. Do you want a home run question or do you want a pitching question?
Let's go with pitching today.
All right. Let's do this one here. I had one for you too. It was really, really good. It was a good pitching question as well. Let me see here. Okay. I'll give you one. I'm wearing a Negro Leagues jersey, so let's go here. Who was the first African-American player inducted into the Hall of Fame who had not played in the Negro Leagues?
Who had not played in the Negro Leagues? Ooh. First African-American player has not played in the Negro Leagues.
Yep. First African-American player who got elected into the Hall of Fame but had not previously played in the Negro Leagues.
Okay. Are we talking NL or AL?
NL.
NL.
National League.
National League. What division? So I know exactly
what. Now, I think I'd give it away if I told you that.
Okay. Okay. So no, I'm not gonna do the division. In the Hall of Fame. So they were inducted in the Hall of Fame. What year?
Yep. They were not the first African American player inducted, but they were the first African American. They were the first African American player inducted into the Hall of Fame that did not previously come from the Negro League.
And what year did they go into the Hall of Fame?
I will tell you it was in the 80s, but I won't tell you what year.
Okay, in the 80s.
Yep. So it's, you know.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. Wow, that didn't play in the Negro Leagues. I already had one. And he played in the Negro Leagues. And he was Cuban born. So, no, it wasn't him. All right, yeah, you got me on this one. Who's that one?
It's St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Fame pitcher Bob Gibson.
Okay, see, I would have never got that. Okay, so Bob Gibson.
Yep, one of my favorite players that put in 1981.
You would have gave it away with St. Louis.
Yeah, if I would have told you he was a. Yeah. You know this. Listen, Gibson was one of my favorite pitchers. When I think back to like those 60s and 70s, and you know those years, but he was the first African American player inducted into the Hall of Fame that had not previously started his career in the Negro Leagues. He actually started his professional baseball career with a non-Negro League team. Guys like Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and Ernie Banks and so forth—they started in the Negro Leagues and then came to what was then known as the Major Leagues. All right, let's wrap up with the MLB power rankings going into May, and then this is based off of ESPN stats and research. So this is as of May 1st. We got the Braves at 1, the Orioles at 2, the Dodgers at 3, the Yankees at 4. And the Phillies at 5. I'll stop at the top 5 right there, and I'll also let you know that the top 5 power ranked teams have not changed for the second week in a row. Should they have changed? And are they in the right spots, Chris?
I got Philly and the Yanks at those two spots. I think 5 and 4 are good for both of those squads. Actually, no, I'd probably take Philly out of the top 5. I'd probably move Baltimore in there.
Well, Baltimore is the number 2 ranked team.
Oh, they're number 2.
So we got Atlanta, Atlanta at number 1, Baltimore at number 2, the Dodgers at 3, the Yanks at 4, and the Phillies at 5.
So then, no, that's
I'll tell you right now, the team right outside at 6 is the Cleveland Guardians.
Okay, so then. It would probably be Philly and Cleveland. I'd probably switch because Cleveland has been playing really good baseball lately. Let me pull up. I think they just finished up a series, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they played 4 straight extra inning games and lost 2 of 4.
Yeah, so we're looking at now they're going into a series playing the Angels. Well, right now they're playing the Astros, and it's 2-1. But for the most part, Cleveland's sitting at 20-10 at the top of the Central. Whereas the Phillies, you've got the Phillies sitting at 21-11. So I mean, they're pretty much playing the same amount of baseball. They're separated by what, one game, just about. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's interchangeable. I think it comes down to preference. Again, I think because me and you are both old school baseball watchers, for me, it's probably going to be Cleveland because Cleveland, to me, plays a cleaner game, in my opinion, than the Phillies. The Phillies rely more on run support so far, whereas Cleveland is, you know, next hitter up, which is the mentality most baseball teams should have. The next hitter, anybody from 1 to 9 can kill you at that home plate. So for me, I'd probably move Cleveland at 5 and Philly on the outside looking in at 6.
All right. Do you have Atlanta number 1 or do you have Baltimore or the Dodgers? Or is Atlanta safely 1 for you?
For right now, it's Atlanta, but Atlanta is going to – it's a shaky number one for me right now. It's a shaky number one. They've lost to the Mets. They've had – let me see. Who else have they played recently?
I mean, they're 20-9. I think they're the only team in baseball with less than without double-digit losses right now.
Right. So their last loss was to the Mariners, and now they're getting ready to start a series with the Dodgers. So
yes,
this will be a big test for them as well. They're starting a 3-game series with the Dodgers starting tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I don't know. It's shaky right now. I know they lost a lot of key pitching with Atlanta. The Dodgers, again, we all know they were supposed to be the big bad team coming into this season, but they're really not hitting their stride that much. You see flashes of it, but you don't really see that team that they're supposed to be. So
one the bottom three, third of their lineup's the problem. I mean, listen,
yeah.
1-6. Yeah. 1-6, they're great. From Mookie Betts, Ohtani, Freeman, Will Smith, Muncy, and then Hernandez, you're having great starts, good starts. Then you got a guy like, oh, I don't know, Chris Taylor, who's hitting 0.61 in the month of April. Okay, he is 4-for-51 with 24 strikeouts to begin the season, is owed $17 million, not this year, after this year, and is in your starting lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, so I agree with you. It's definitely the bottom half of the order that cannot get on base or cannot bring guys home. Because I want to say the Dodgers are probably one of the teams that leave a lot of guys on base, at least when it comes in scoring position. So, and that's part of the Yankees' problem as well. Leave a lot of guys on base, which are why, you know, what's been keeping them in the top five so far, at least with the Yankees, is again plate discipline. But it got exposed during this particular series with Baltimore. And I want to say this is probably one of the first series that we've lost so far this season. So, I mean.
And you know what's interesting? Yankees have played 32 games, have been shut out 5 times in 32 games.
Yeah.
But yet they lead the American League in both on-base percentage. They lead the American League in on-base percentage. They're third in the American League in runs scored. They've also grounded, as you were talking about leaving people on base, 36 double plays, the most double plays in the major leagues. And, in fact, Aaron Judge has already grounded into 10 double plays. His career high in his entire career was 16 in a season, and he's got 10 in the month of April. Let's go to the second 10. Let's round up this top 10. Again, now ESPN has the Guardians at 6. I know in your personal power rankings you have the Guardians at 5, but the Guardians are ranked 6 by ESPN. Seattle Mariners, 7th. The Chicago Cubs, 8th. The Texas Rangers, 9th. And the Milwaukee Brewers, 10th. Now, in this, the big move, the Guardians were ranked 6th the previous week. The Cubs were ranked 8th. The Rangers were ranked 9th. The Milwaukee Brewers were previously ranked 7th, dropped to 10th. And the Seattle Mariners, who were previously ranked 14th, have jumped all the way to 7th.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with the bottom half of this this power ranking, to be honest with you. The Mariners, I mean, right now they're atop at the American League West at 17-14, but the Rangers are right behind them. They're right at their heels at 17-15. And pretty much their numbers mirror each other, at least the away numbers. The Mariners aren't a very good away, you know, on the road team. They're 6-6 on the road. The Rangers are 7-6 on the road. And then you have the home splits, which is the Mariners are 11-8 at home. The Rangers are 10-9 at home. So they pretty much have the same numbers as far as their home and away goes. Honestly, the defending champs being so far down where they are right now, I'm kind of shocked, honestly. I thought you would see more of a sort of the same team you saw last year, especially with them being picked to go back to back. And then not only that, I want to say that Max Scherzer hasn't came into play just yet. I know he hasn't came off the injury reserve as of yet. So, and they pretty much have the same team, that same championship team. I expect them to turn it around, though. I expect the Texans to turn it around. And it's going to be between them and Seattle. And I've always liked Seattle. I think Seattle is a pretty young team. They just – it had to take them time to put it together. So now they're sitting at that seven spot. And who's to say they can't, you know, by the time we do this again, they're not in top five or top six, you know?
So yeah, especially if their pitching holds up there.
Yes.
They ranked in the top 10 in both really starting and relief.
The pitching has definitely kept them in games lately. And I want to say, let me see, their next set of games right now are – I believe they play the Astros. So they play the Astros next, who really aren't playing that best, their best baseball. So I could see them taking that series. Then they play the Twins. And then after the Twins, they play the Athletics and then the Royals. And then in the middle of May, when we get to the 17th, they play Baltimore. So they pretty much have a favorable schedule going into the middle of May. And then they turn around and play the Yankees towards the end and the Nationals and then the Astros again and then the Angels. So they've got one, two, three winnable series that they can go into the middle of May. And then once we get towards the end, you got Baltimore and the Yankees, where those are going to be their real tests, especially in the American League. And then you turn around and play the Nationals, the Astros again, the Angels, the Athletics, the Royals again, and then the White Sox. So, I mean, for the most part, you have a favorable end of May going towards June, but the weather, the thick of the storm is going through Baltimore and the Yankees for the Mariners right now. So I could see them easily jumping into the top five with that favorable schedule if their pitching holds up.
Let's looking at the outside of the top 10, I want to talk about four very specific teams. The Boston Red Sox jumped from 15 last week to 11th, right outside of the top 10. Mm-hmm. The Minnesota Twins jumped from 23 all the way up to 14. Talk about a rally sausage.
Yeah.
And a team that's really dropped, I want to talk about, is the Toronto Blue Jays, who were previously ranked 10 and have dropped to 15. What do you see with these three teams there, the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Twins?
Well, the Blue Jays just haven't been consistent at all. And I think that's been proven with the Yankee series the most. They just weren't a consistent team when they need to be. So for me, I think that's going to be the Blue Jays' downfall is consistency. Now, as far as Boston goes on the opposite end, Boston right now, they're starting to find their stride. I mean, we talked about it last week. Their bullpen pretty much was probably one of the best bullpens percentage-wise and number-wise right now through the month of April.
Yeah.
And they have a pretty favorable schedule as well. Right now, they're playing the Giants beat them. They took that series against the Giants, though. Winning 4-0 on a shutout on April 30th, and then 6-2 yesterday, and then today was 3-1 in the Giants' favor. But now you play the Minnesota Twins, who have jumped up in the power rankings, but then they go against the Braves for two sets, and then after they play the Braves, they play the Nationals and then the Rays, and then after the Rays, they play the Cardinals. So again, another pretty favorable team with a favorable schedule. If they're pitching, again, another team, pitching has to hold up for them. They're 7-9 at home. They're 11-5 away, so they are a better road team than they are a home team. And they're 6-4 is over the last 10. I mean, out of a team that really isn't expected of much, they're really doing pretty well. And then on the flip side,
yeah, I mean, they lost Lucas Giolito before the season even started. Their big their big pitching haul in free agency. And I mean, they've got Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford. Like, these are not guys that we expected to be leading the major leagues in ERA. One of the leaders, 1.60, 1.56. You know, they were 22nd in the majors in ERA last year, and yet they've come around, and right now their ERA is 2.03 as a team, their rotation, which is the best in the majors by a half a run. I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't expect anything out of the Red Sox, especially when they lost Giolito. And this is a team that not only has a winning record, but is in third place in an AL East, where we're seeing the Yankees have some offensive trouble, and we haven't really even played Boston yet. And that's what scares me. Like, we looked at it. Okay, the Boston's probably going to be a punching bag this year. You know, the Rays are always hit and miss, but they look like to be a punching bag this year. You know, the big problems are going to be Toronto and Baltimore. Right now, Baltimore showed it's still going to be a problem. Toronto, you never know if they're going to turn it on. And if they do, we know how dangerous they can be. And right now, with our offensive woes, are we going to be able to hit against the rotation of the Boston Red Sox?
And I think that's what it comes down to when we do get to that series between the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox. It's going to come down to bullpens. And if that news that broke, you know, earlier with Gerrit Cole starting to warm up and looking at a June return, that couldn't have came at a better time. So to get Gerrit Cole back in this rotation, to get him, you know, throwing again and get him back to that, you know, Cy Young award winning pitcher, to have him in a series against a Boston, against a Baltimore, against, you know, a Seattle, against these teams that bullpens have been pretty much perfection for the most part, it's gonna help us in the long run. You know, and you know Cole's gonna be your number one. Your number two is probably gonna be, at this point, looking like it's Clark Schmidt. So you're gonna have Cole.
I'd put Stroman at the two.
You put Stroman. Okay, so Cole, Stroman, Schmidt, Nestor,
and Rodon. Rodon's definitely, if you're putting Schmidt up that high, I'd put Rodon five. But I would probably go Cole, Stroman, Nestor, Rodon, Schmidt, or Schmidt, Rodon. But me right now, it's Cole, it's Nestor, it's Stroman, and then it's Nestor.
And you know who we're not showing respect to? We're not showing respect to Gil at all, because he's been it hasn't been consistent, but in the games that we do have him penciled in as our starting pitcher, he has came through for us. It's just been luck of the draw when it comes down to our relief pitching. But
he's only 25 years old.
Yeah, but those series, that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to bullpen. It's going to come down to basically all around pitching. Who's going to get the upper hand on the pitching when it comes down to the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox? Because right now, like you said, the Red Sox have the best bullpen in baseball by what, half? You know, so
at least half of the best rotation.
Yeah, so they have the best rotation. So in a four-game series set, I mean, you have to take at least, if I'm the Yankees, you have to take at least three out of the four. You can't split with Boston.
Yeah. Talking about the remaining teams, we've only, you know, we didn't mention them, but other teams we haven't mentioned, Grizz. Let's kind of sign off this episode with this. Who's a team to watch that we did not mention in the power ranks? Definitely not in the top five, but one of the ones that we did not mention. Who's the big team for you to watch over the next month, over the month of May?
The big team to watch for me over the next month of May, I gotta tell you, and they're coming up soon for us, I'm probably gonna go with the sleeper team of Detroit. I'm gonna go with the Tigers. The Tigers right now, they're 10-4 away. They're 7-3 in the last 10. They're 8-9 at home. They're sitting at 18-13. The Royals are 19-13. The Guardians are sitting at 20-10. So that race is pretty tight in that Central. So don't be surprised if by the next time we're talking about this, the Detroit Tigers are within or on the outside looking in the top 10. So I'm definitely going with the Detroit Tigers. On the flip side, on the National League, you could pick the Reds. You can even pick the Giants. The Giants are, you know, they haven't been as consistent. But I think the team that really you have to keep an eye on is probably the Nationals. The Nationals are 15-16. They're just about at 500, but them and the Mets are kind of 1-1 right now. So either between the Reds or the Nationals, those are two teams I'd keep my eye on. Or even the Chicago Cubs, that's another team as well, sitting at 19-13, 10-3 at home, 9-10 away. They're not really a good away team, but those are definitely four teams that we could be talking about the next time we're here, either on the outside of the top 10 or could possibly sneak their way into the top 10 in the power rankings in May.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth with Detroit. I mean, I think they're the big team to keep an eye on right now. I mean, you know, Tarik Skubal is absolutely killing it on the mound right now. He's one of my favorite pitchers to watch in the Major League Baseball. If he's pitching a game, I'm usually putting on MLB TV or watching the highlights of that game because he has just been absolutely great. And, you know, they really hope that they're going to get more of what they got last week from Jack Flaherty,
who,
you know, has so much potential as a number one starter. It's going to be a question of can he be consistent. He had a four ERA through his first six starts, but he's 50 strikeouts, mm-hmm. 50 freaking strikeouts. He struck out 14 against the Cardinals, and struck out the first seven batters he faced in a row. So we see those flashes. In terms of the National League, it's a little bit tighter for me. And you know, we didn't talk about them in the power ranking. So I'm going to bend the rules a little bit here. We didn't talk about them in the power ranking, but we just talk about them on the show. The team that I'm going to keep my eye on in the month of May is the New York Mets.
Okay.
They have what I think to be a really solid team. They have a very decent starting rotation. It has not been bad at all. But they do need to have more timely hitting. They need to step up their batting average and, of course, their power game. They need to get guys on base. But I think the Mets have a very exciting team. And when you're looking at the standings in the National League, they're behind the Braves and the Phillies. But if I'm looking wild card here, you know, are the Mets better than the Reds? Yes, they are. Yeah. Offensively, 100%. Are they better than? Can they be better than the Padres and the Giants? I think they can. So can the Mets sneak into a wild card spot? Yeah, because you're probably going to have Atlanta and Philly fighting it out for a division spot, Milwaukee and Chicago. But I really think Chicago is going to step up and Milwaukee's going to fade based on what I've seen from Milwaukee. And I think the Mets have an opportunity to grab that second wild card spot. I think we're going to see three teams in the National League East, the Braves, the Phillies, and the Mets, all make the playoffs. And it's really going to depend on the Mets' offense really turning the corner. I think their pitching has been really good. There is a lot left to be desired. They still have, in my opinion, one of the best closers in all of baseball, and Edwin Diaz. I'll take Edwin Diaz any day over Clay Holmes, 100%. Give me Edwin Diaz. I'll take him every single day. So to me, I mean, the Tigers and the Mets are really those two wild cards. And when you look at, again, you look at the standings right now, the Tigers are third. But to me, again, another team that could, if not win this division, I think could definitely be a wild card team. So to me, yeah, it's going to be Detroit. It's going to be the Mets. Cincinnati, just too inconsistent for me on offense. I mean, really, they have – in fact, I was looking at this earlier today. They have the worst batting average in terms of having hard hit balls.
Okay.
They're not hitting the ball very hard. When they do hit the ball, it's well, but it's wildly inconsistent for me. And when I look at what the team that the Mets have, you still have Pete Alonso. If Pete Alonso just hits the back of his baseball card, you have one of the best first basemen in the league. If Francisco Lindor hits the back of his baseball card, if JD Martinez hits the back of his baseball card, like, you have guys that if they give you just the bare minimum of what they usually produce, you have a very solid team. And I think the Mets can be dangerous once they hit their stride. Grizza, what an episode.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, definitely. I think
episode, you know, we're looking, we're getting into May. You know, we're going to start seeing a different dynamic in Major League Baseball, where we're going to start seeing teams really start to gel and really start to come out. Thanks a lot to our production team behind the scenes, Big Baby. Incredible last week at We Are Wrestling. I was overjoyed by the reception that we got from the crowd and the locker room. It was an incredible show. Grizz, can't wait for you to get back up to New York so we can have you there in the house.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be there for the next show. Definitely. I'll actually be there in June. So if you do have a show coming up in June, end of June, I will be there.
Yeah, I'm gonna wrap up today's show by sending a heartfelt we love you. I'm not going to reveal anything. I don't know how public they've been with this. I know something's gone out, but I don't know how public, so I don't want to reveal anybody else's information. But I want to send a heartfelt amount of love to Ruthless Lala.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she did suffer an injury this past weekend that they just found out about. Again, I'm not going to go into details about it. That is her story to tell and share. I don't know how much of it has been shared publicly, but sending her a lot of love from every single one of us. She was on my show on Friday, last Friday, and absolutely killed it, as she always does. And so, you know, just sending her all the love in the world. As you know, we got you back always. But for the Territorian, Alphonse Stevens, who I am guaranteeing will finally make his on-camera debut for episode 4. And if he doesn't, we're probably going to have to send him down to the minors for a rehab assignment. But for the Territory at Alphonse Stevens, for the Big Grizz, thank you to everybody in the Year Sports Show Network. Also, big shout out, before we go, before I forget, because I have old man memory. Yo, big shout out, Chopper Cheers Podcast, 300 episodes.
Yes.
That is absolutely incredible. We're three and counting, so we got like 297 more to go.
Yeah.
But we're going to get there. We're going to get there. I am the voice of a generation, Pete Rosato. Thank you very much, as always. Dog Days of Baseball. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right.